This is about my Burning Man vacation. I'm not really sure, but I think my Burning Man vacation began back before Burning Man began. Back in the mid-70s, 1976, 77, 78, somewhere around there, I had a 69 Dodge Dart, and I decided to have a party and paint it. And everybody that I knew in the area, I invited to come paint this car, and it was free party. It was like, you know, there was paint to paint, and there was free food, and there was free beer. I mean, free for the people that showed up. Wasn't free for me, but I was getting my car painted. And also brought in this junk from junkyards and stuff for people to play with. There was some sort of dental machine to be dismantled and rebuilt into something artistic. And there were all these sticks and jugs, like milk jugs, to put together and do something with. And it was just like, what the heck? And then I gave away things like my Rock Lobster costume and my hat and my coat I wore every day in high school and just silly stuff. And I don't know, I just did it. And it was fun. And then back around 1980 or so, we put another coat on the car and had another party, and I did a puppet show, and it was all crazy and self-indulgent, but it was free for everybody, and people brought stuff, and we had kind of a potluck too. And then later on, I had another party. They just put another coat on the car and had a good time and didn't have a puppet show, but we did have a potluck, and we left all the potatoes in the oven. Like 100 baked potatoes. We forgot to get them out. And then somebody told me about Burning Man. This was in the late 80s. And said, have you ever heard of Burning Man? And I said, no. Why do you ask? And they said, I don't know. Something about your car and your craziness. And so then I thought about Burning Man, but not too much, because we moved to Saipan and didn't come back till 1995. But then in 1995, I heard a lot more about Burning Man, and I thought, man, I'd like to go, but we couldn't afford it. And then I got a job where we could afford it, maybe, and I still wanted to go, but I couldn't go because my job was teaching school. And school started about the same time as Burning Man, and I couldn't just leave school right after it started, because that's, you know, busy time of school. So then, 9 years later, came an opportunity provided by the class of 67 of the school at which I taught to allow me to receive funding from the class of 67 of the school where I taught or teach and go to Burning Man. And I thought, wonderful. If this goes through, I'll be lucky. And it will be Providence. And it went through. And so I am lucky. But I don't know about the Providence. That's just handy thinking. Well, in the meantime of going to Burning Man, I also did art stuff. And back in the 70s, I did clay pieces and puppet show pieces and silliness pieces that all had something to do with death and spirituality and a transitory existence, a temporary nature, a temporary existence, and acknowledging the fact that, you know, we're just here for a short while, and all this business about eternity, well, that's a handy conjecture, but when it gets down to it, the only thing I know is whatever is hitting me right now in this physical universe, or has hit me in the past that I remember. And I did several pieces along this line, and Burning Man approached me that way. I mean, Larry Harvey, who he and his buddies sort of started the Burning Man thing, he's got a whole spiel and a lot of lectures and talks and stuff about what Burning Man really is to him and to others and everything, but to me, it's a big representation of temporary existence and celebration of our existence and our creativity and the wonderful stuff that we can do as human beings, even if it is temporary. Well, I took this approach in how I would participate in Burning Man somewhat, and I found a lot of branches coming together of my concepts to sort of culminate in this Burning Man experience, and they all mixed together in this smorgasbord of soupy thoughts that, you know, didn't really come to any sort of fruition, and to separate them is kind of like me going into a soup, a summer soup, a vegetable soup, where all the ingredients are already mixed, and taken as a whole, the soup might be good, and to separate them into their components, their individual parts, the individual ideas, is somewhat tedious and may not make a lot of sense, and by the time you get done, each individual component may taste bad or not stand on its own. But I don't know of any other way to do it. So I'm going to take it one component at a time and hope that it makes some sense. The first component that I will talk about is, well, the component of gifting. Because Burning Man is a phenomenal aggregation of individuals in a city on a desert playa where there is absolutely nothing except flatness and wind and dust and sunshine and sometimes rain. But when the city gathers, people just give. They give the stuff that they bring to other people. And it isn't like you set up a booth and you just give away little presents. Some things may seem like that, but people come and they establish an area, and then they give freely of whatever it is they give, whether it's their time, their energy, their knowledge, their resources, their liquor, their food, their talents. They give these things to each other. And so it's like a giant potluck of human ability and human desire and human experience and human creativity. And it all happens simultaneously. So I thought I would give away these little flutes. And I purchased I don't know, about 500 feet of half inch PVC, and I cut them into approximately 12 inch sections, and I drilled about 3 of them, and then I ran out of time. And so I didn't take the 500 flutes that I planned to take and give out as a gift, because I didn't know what to give. And in giving these flutes, I plan to dress up as a crazy Jesus guy, because I don't know. This is what I plan to do. And to dress up as crazy Jesus guy, I was going to wear a robe. So I purchased these robes from eBay. And these robes were of some sort of robe that they wear in the Arab desert. And it was made of rayon. And I tried to dye it using natural dyes. No, it wasn't rayon, it was polyester. And so I'm thinking how silly it is of me to try to dye these rather unnatural man-made fibers with natural dyes, which is what I did. I tried to dye them with blackberry juice, and that didn't work. It washed right out. And then I tried to dye them with tie-dyes and blackberry juice, and it worked until I washed them, and then it didn't work anymore. And I tie-dyed them in such a way as to create rings representing the 7 chakras and all crazy sort of spiritual concepts and such. And I was going to walk around and be crazy Jesus guy, and I created a frisbee with a picture of Kurt Vonnegut on it, and I wrote farting around on this frisbee, and took a scraping of my car, my Dodge Dart, and taped it to this frisbee, and made the frisbee a spinner with Kurt Vonnegut's chin as the pointer. And I planned to walk around with a backpack of goodies and confront people in a nice way and ask them to spin the spinner. And when they spun the spinner that said farting around, wherever the spinner landed would provide that I performed some thing for them. And that thing may be to give them one of the flutes and say, here is music. Or to play a song on the ukulele and give them the gift of song. Or to perform a impromptu puppet show for them with a couple of sock puppets. Or to blow up a swishy balloon and create a balloon sculpture for them. These represented the fine arts to me, as in drama and music and visual art sculpture. But it didn't work that way. For one, I didn't get my flutes made. For two, I didn't take the time to walk around. For three, the balloons that I planned to hand out were going to blow all over the playa and become moop. And moop is matter out of place. And so these balloons were just going to become a lot of matter out of place, and I really didn't want that. So I ended up not giving away any balloons, and I ended up not walking around in the robe as crazy Jesus guy. That plan just disappeared. Although I did take balloons, I did take the frisbee, and I did wear the robe at some time. Another idea that I had for Burning Man was to give honey. And I did that. I gave honey to the group of lamplighters That is one way that I wanted to participate in Burning Man, was through camping with and working with the lamplighters. The lamplighters light the city without fail by using kerosene lanterns. And they go through the city and they hang about 1,000 kerosene lanterns in the evening, every evening. And they meet about 5 o'clock and clean all the lanterns and fill all the lanterns and light all the lanterns and put robes upon the volunteers and go out and light the city. And that's what I helped with. My primary job was to tend robes and place robes on people every evening. And that was a very enjoyable way to participate in the Burning Man experience. And I camped with the lamplighters in their village, and that was a very enjoyable way to participate in camping at Burning Man. I went in a little bit early to Burning Man to help set up. I was going to help the cafe set up, but I couldn't quite coordinate with the person in charge of setting up the cafe, so I ended up helping the lamplighters set up, which was great because I camped with them. Helping to set up and helping to lamplight were ways to give back to the city that was providing such a wonderful experience for myself. I also volunteered at the cafe. The Cinder Cafe is one of the two places where vending is allowed. Commercial vending is not allowed. People don't sell things except they sell ice at the ice space, and they sell coffee and other drinks such as mocha and tea and energy drinks at the Center Cafe. And so in addition to helping with the lamplighters, I helped at the Center Cafe several days, three shifts, and during the busy time of day from 11 until 3 o'clock or so, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And on Monday, the wind blew, and it was crazy. And on other days, it was crazy because it's such fun to work with such crazy people. But it was busy, and you just stayed busy doing things, filling things, eating things, doing things. I also went out one night as a greeter and helped from about 8 o'clock till 12 o'clock one night, helped say howdy to people coming into Burning Man and give them some information and ask them to ring the bell if it was their first time and ask them to roll about the playa and get playa dust upon them, because it was an experience to get the dust on you. You would get the dust on you, in you, through you, sometime during the experience of Burning Man, so you might as well just jump right in. One of the most... Well, I guess, sort of sincere, yet silly things I did was to incorporate an experience that happened during the time that I knew I was going to go to Burning Man, and that was somehow associated with temporary existence and everything else that I thought about as far as artistic expression. And it had to do with the death of our bull, Haney. We have these pets, these Highland cows, and they're hairy and cute, and they're not very practical beef cows. In fact, a friend of ours that is a beef
farmer said we had the wrong breed, but I disagree because they're just so cool looking. But in December, when we went to see our son Ian in Arizona, a windstorm came through and blew trees down over the fence and Hamish the bull and the two cows went, well, two heifers at the time, went to the neighbor's place and ate their grass. And they did this several days, I think, and then they would come back and feed in the evening. And then one day they didn't come back, and so I went to look for them, and I didn't find them for 3 days, and I finally found them on the other side of the hill, and the cows were standing there, and Hamish was dead in a ditch. And come to find out, he had been shot through the heart. Now, I don't know who shot him, but I do know that one of the neighbors kept saying,
"Now, you know, if that bull got in with my Charlays, we would have a problem."
Now, even though Hamish's stubby legs would not let him beat his sexual parts with the sexual parts of a Charlay, I didn't bring that point up. I just felt like I had been irresponsible in allowing my fences to stay down so long, even though I didn't know they were down, and that Hamish's departure from my protection was my neglect, and he was dead due to my neglect,
and I felt badly about that, and I wanted to make his death more than just, oh, something that happened because of my neglect. And so I tried to preserve his memory by taking his hide, because he died at the end of December and his hide was full and thick. And so I worked in 16 degree weather and took his hide from his body, and then I hung him in a tree, in a persimmon tree on the top of the hill. And I hung him there, and I clothed him with black and white robes. And I clothed him with saffron robes. And he stayed in the tree. And he was hovering above the ground, about 5 to 6 feet off the ground. And he just looked cool. He had hair on his head and hair on his feet, which protruded from the robes. And he somehow exuded a power by his presence hanging above the ground. That's what I thought, but really it was just something to do in case the neighbor that happened to shoot him happened to come across him hanging in the tree. And I thought it might have some effect upon that neighbor. Well, Hamish hung and hangs there. And he dried in the winter, and his carcass turned to leather, and he became jerky in the tree. And his jaw sort of twisted. And I wrote a poem that says, "Then Hamish hangs in holy robes." Aw, heck, I can't remember. And something about twisting his teeth into the night. But I can't remember it now. Anyway, I took Hamish's hide and I stretched it on a ring of wood, and it stayed there all winter, and in the summer I noticed the domestic beetles had started eating away some of the hair, and I thought, crap, the hide is going to go to waste if I don't do something about tanning it. So I ordered some tanning materials, and I soaked the hide, and I scraped the hide, and I tan the hide, and I stretch the hide, and I scrape the hide, and I soak the hide, and I did all of these things to the hide that the tanning formula bottle said to do, and it took me days to follow this process. And in the end, I ended up with this splotchy, crappy hide that was stiff as a board and had multiple naked spots where Hamish's hide had fallen off. And I thought, well, I'm going to dress up in this hide, and I'm going to make a mask out of Hamish's hide and this deer skull that we found on the property that had asymmetrical antlers. And I'm going to call myself Streptocephalus Rex. And I'm going to let the antlers represent the chain of antennae that are found on a fairy shrimp, Streptocephalus coeli. The fairy shrimp representing temporary existence, as the fairy shrimp only happen after a rain in a temporary pond. And I'm also going to let Hamish represent temporary existence, because his death represents the temporary nature of our existence. His death to me also represented the death of the impending winter, and how we have ceremony, and pagan ceremony, that represents an attempt to gain everlasting life, whether that life be everlasting through the cycles here on earth, and we go through a procedure and a ceremony of sacrifice in hopes that our nourishment will reappear in the springtime, or we have this sacrifice of humans, such as Jesus Christ, in hopes that this sacrifice will allow for our life to proceed into an everlasting life. Well, this was all wrapped up in the way I was thinking of Hamish. And I wanted to celebrate his life by becoming this entity of Streptocephalus Rex. Well, that didn't happen. I was planning on becoming Streptocephalus Rex during the night of the burn, of the burning man. But the night that the man burned, there was a call for volunteers to go and relieve the rangers that had been standing around the man for 8 hours without a break. And they came into the village camp of the lamplighters and called for volunteers. And I volunteered, and I went straight to the man and didn't have time to change into the robe of Hamish's hair and hide to become Streptocephalus Rex. I just went out there in my shorts, stood my ground, kept people from getting too close to the man, but I got included in the inner circle when he burned, and that was quite a wonderful experience. Now, Hamish's hide was not going to be used for the purpose that I was going to use it for, and so I decided to offer it in the temple. And the temple is a structure that houses the dreams and the regrets and the memorials and the ideas and the feelings of many individuals that come to place these very personal things in the temple, knowing that these things will be consumed by fire on the Sunday of Burning Man. And so I took Hamish's hide to the temple, and that is the time that I wore the robe to the temple, and I left Hamish's hide in the temple to be burned in the temple burn. I also took some artwork from the students.
that I teach that I don't think fully understood what I meant when I said that if you had a memorable idea or a, I can't remember how I phrased it, but I don't think I phrased it right, because there was only one or two students that actually presented a piece of paper that had upon it things that I felt were the same type of things that I found in the temple when I got there. And some of the other things were drawings, but that's okay. Anyway, my coherence in this presentation is not very coherent, and I apologize. Another tangent of my Burning Man experience had to do with service. And I've explained the examples of service in going to set up the village early, in participating in the Lamplighter Village and the lamplighting activity every evening, in participating in the greeters, and in participating in working at the cafe, and in participating by helping the rangers on the night of the burn. But my participation impaired my ability to appreciate the participation of others, and because I was so tired that I could not go around the village and appreciate and participate in the gifts that others were offering, because I was just too tired. But I did get to go out and see the art, and did get to go out and meet some people. But I feel that I failed to fully utilize that opportunity. I'm trying to think if there were other ways that I tied Burning Man into my life and artwork. And there is a personal way that I tied Burning Man in. I thought Burning Man may turn into some very spiritual experience, a culmination, an enlightenment. But what I found was that I do what I do already. I think what I think already. And Burning Man was just a wonderful extension of things that are happening already. But what I did find was that the people at Burning Man were so open and accepting of each other in all these wacky ways. And people exposed themselves. Yes, they went naked, but that was because I feel that people felt very comfortable doing whatever they wanted to do and knowing that they wouldn't be judged harshly by others, that they would be accepted, because people understood the community. Even though there were very few restrictions upon expression, the people respected the feelings of others, and they were pretty much honest, and people didn't trash things. There were 50,000 people out there, and there was less trash in the whole city loose than I see on the campus of my school, where only 350 people mill about day in and day out. And it confused me somehow why one community that places its foundation on service and being honest and being good and truthful and not lying, cheating, or stealing, and celebrating diversity, and then and it has sort of a conservative structure. And then there was this other community of Burning Man that was quite liberal in its structure and quite vulgar and obscene in many of the ways that people express themselves. But these expressions were so pure and honest that this honesty overshadowed anything that may be interpreted as obscene in the outside world. And don't get me wrong, it wasn't like it was just a big X-rated movie. It wasn't. But the exposure to such openness in the middle of the desert, and the fact that people had to escape to the middle of a desert and endure harsh conditions in order to have this freedom of expression was just sort of sad to me. That was the extent that people had to go in order to celebrate this freedom. And it bothered me when I returned and I found that in my everyday world, people just, I don't know, even myself, are not as honest as we could be, and good as we could be, and open as we should be, and things are just more complicated than they need to be, and maybe I'm just those things. And I impose them externally, and they're really just internal characteristics. But anyway, it gave me cause to think about it. I'm going to stop now.